Good afternoon. This is Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. This week, years after marijuana is legalized in Colorado, it may soon be sold in Snowmass Village. Residents react to the pot prospect and consider an additional tax on the drug. The Basalt Town Council held court for nearly 6 hours this week, as discussion ranged from the spark that led to the Lake Christine fire to a new development in downtown. And does the Upper Valley's 40-year-old housing program need new management? Joining me today are Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Hi, Curtis. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun.
Hey, Allison.
And Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm. Hi, Wyatt.
Hi, Allison.
Thank you all for joining me. This is Valley Roundup from Aspen Public Radio. Okay, Erica, I want to start with you. Snowmass Town Council has a moratorium on pot sales ever since marijuana was legalized in Colorado that is set to expire at the end of October. What are some of the discussions around that that's been happening this month?
So there's been a lot, Allison. Since late June, the council gave direction for town staff to begin to prepare basically the rules and what they want to see happen, and that was a 3-2 vote. The two dissenting members were Snowmass Mayor Marky Butler and her councilwoman, Alyssa Shank. And the mayor has been pretty adamant about not wanting to see that happen in Snowmass. There's been concerns about family-friendly, you know, pot shops interfering with that image that Snowmass boasts, and there's been some pushback, but they've finally moved forward. And just recently at Monday's meeting, the mayor said she's done trying to, you know, fight against that. So unless there is a petition against marijuana, the moratorium will expire October 31. And unless they extend that in order to develop their regulatory scheme, then there it is.
Go slowly into that dark night. So they do have a draft plan of what pot might look like in Snowmass Village now. What are some of the things they're considering?
So they had discussed wanting to regulate the number of pot shops, not wanting it to look like Aspen, more or less. And it sounds like from the town manager's perspective that the easiest way to do that will be by feet rather than actually putting a cap on the number of licenses distributed. So right now they're looking at a distance between one recreational pot shop to another of 300 feet. But they also at Monday's meeting looked at 500 feet potentially. That's something that Shank and Butler were interested in. So I think they'll revisit that. The mall looks like no more than a couple, if not, you know, one at each place. And that's depending on, you know, which commercial development owners and operators want to lease to pot shops.
And I think the Base Village owners have said no already.
Yes.
They've come out and said, we're not interested. You know, Base Village is a family friendly monster development. And we are not going to support the pot shops.
And since it's private, it's a private retail space, they can regulate
landlords can rent to whomever they want. And there's plenty of landlords out there that say, I don't like your money, pot shops, go away. You know, that we had a case of that potentially at the ABC where the landlords there have said no to potential pot shop tenants.
The 300 to 500 distance between the pot shops is a little funny to me because it actually seems like you would spread pot throughout the village more, you know, instead of, I was imagining we could have like the seedy strip where there's just like four pot shops in a row, but that's the only place it's regulated to, you know?
So that was one thing that the council also has discussed is not wanting to also present the image of it being like a back alley business. You don't want to create that image that like, oh, here are these shops and we're hiding them, but they're, you know, they want to have some transparency, of course. So I think I'm not going to hypothesize how many there will be, but I think they do want to also keep them off like the main floor of either the mall or the Snowmass Center. So on the upper area or tucked away.
It is funny how different Mayor Marky Butler's opinion about marijuana is from the public, right? There was a public survey, like, do we want this in our town? And people were pretty okay with it.
So two things there. One, her argument, fair or not, is that a very small pool of Snowmass voters participated in that survey, and that number is about 15%. Oh. So, you know, her view is that's not an accurate sentiment of the community, which is, you know, take that for what it is. And then also the 2012 Precinct 6 vote in Snowmass was predominantly in favor of legalizing marijuana. However, an argument there is that the vote was to legalize it in Colorado, not in Snowmass.
Okay.
So,
well, it was 70% plus in favor.
Yeah.
One thing that we looked at those survey results too, and there was some really interesting data in there when you split it up, because they divided it up between full-time year-round residents and the part-time homeowners. Mm-hmm. And even though it's small sample size as it was, the residents that responded were strongly in favor, or at least, you know, a clear majority. It was the second homeowners that were like 70-30 against it.
Okay, that was 71%.
Which is really strange and funny. And you wonder if those numbers would hold true if you, if you sectioned off the second homeowners in Aspen. Are the second homeowners in Snowmass,
right,
by their nature, more conservative when it comes to pot shops than they are in the rest of Colorado? Which maybe they are, because they bought into Snowmass and its family-friendly reputation.
Erica, you even had in your story that Mayor Butler singled out, well, we have visitors from Texas, Michigan, Illinois, and Georgia. You like singled out the states who are like not going to be cool with pot.
Exactly. And I think what Curtis just said is fair, that there are these pockets people are coming from where pot shops just don't have the same view. And with that also, some people in the town have said they think some second homeowners might be concerned with their property tax value decreasing with the addition of pot shops in Snowmass. I don't know if that's a far stretch. I don't know if that's what they think, but that's definitely, I've heard that a few times.
Does that have any basis, do you know? Like
have we seen property
taxes? Have we seen property taxes go down because of recreational pot shops?
I wish I could say. I could only speculate on that, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, what we know has happened is education has, funding for education has gone up through POTS statewide, right? Like that, it's set aside for these special programs. So there is something for the local community. And if the local community is who wants this, that would make sense. That comes back once you do start collecting taxes on marijuana. And they're actually talking about making it probably the most expensive pot in the state, right? Putting this additional tax on top of that.
Well, yes, it could be arguably because Snowmass has a very high sales tax, but there are, a decent number of municipalities that do tackle that extra sales tax. Aspen does not.
So there is a ballot measure going to voters this fall. It's just not, the question isn't pot or not. The question is, should we tax pot?
Exactly.
What was the council saying about how much we should tax, or if they would be in favor of that?
Up to 5%.
Okay.
And that's as much as you're allowed to tax that additional levy.
All right. We're going to talk about a different meeting now, Wyatt. It was almost like a theatrical display in a 6-hour Basalt Town Council meeting.
These are the kind of meetings that we as local journalists live for.
As long as we can get sustenance
all of the community's angst played out in four acts.
As long as you had dinner beforehand, you were in for just a real treat.
No intermission.
Don't eat during, though.
Don't eat during.
The bag of chips is so loud.
He is so loud.
We're going to hit on this a couple of times because so many issues came up. But to keep with that, like kind of our syntax theme of the beginning of this show, we're going to talk about liquor licenses and Whole Foods looking for a malt liquor license so that they can sell low alcohol beer, kombucha in their store. How did that play out at the meeting?
It didn't go well for them. They brought an attorney to basically kind of plead their case. The attorney interviewed the store manager and talked about the need that the community supposedly has for another 3.2 malt liquor. It's actually called a fermented malt beverage license. Mm. And the little trick about this is that the stores that have this particular license, they can sell 3.2 beer, but starting in January of 2019, they'll be able to sell full strength beer. The community, at least those at the public hearing, were adamantly adamantly concerned about Four Dogs liquor, fine wines and spirits, which is right next door to Whole Foods. And there seemed to be just this kind of this feeling in the room that we can't let Whole Foods kind of, basically kind of undermine a local business. And so, yeah, it did not go well for them. The Auden Chandler, one of the Basalt Town Council members, gave kind of an impassioned speech, kind of encouraging his council members to deny this. And it was basically, the argument was, big corporation versus beating up on little kind of local on little local Four Dogs fine wines and spirits. And so, you know, I think there are a lot of questions about to what extent does the town kind of, you know, shape the market down there. I think that there were some questions that were not answered necessarily during the meeting, but the sentiment was pretty clear. All the councilors said, we don't see the need. There are plenty of places that already have this license. We don't think that Whole Foods necessarily needs this as well. And then there was kind of a rebuttal to the big corporation coming in and flexing its muscles.
Did the town council set themselves up for a little bit of danger here, though, by rebuking Whole Foods so hard just based on their attitude and the type of business they are? Because really, they need to look at, is there a need for this license or not? They can't look at who gets it, right?
I'm speculating here, and I don't know. I there has to be a mechanism by which the Whole Foods can appeal this decision. But ultimately, the council, you know, it did seem as if the council could simply say, we don't see a need, and that's legitimate grounds for denying this liquor license, and that's what they said. We don't see the need.
I think this is Basalt grappling with something that is just about, this has been underplayed, I think, just statewide in the media, but this is going to kind of shake so much of Colorado's liquor infrastructure to its core, because what's the first thing you learn when you move to Colorado? It's don't buy the beer in the grocery store. And isn't it weird when you go to another state, when you go to California or something like that, and they have like liquor in the grocery store? Yeah. You're like, what is going on here?
Totally. But next to like the cucumbers or something.
Yeah. But in Colorado, it's like such a thing about Colorado is you, the grocery stores can't sell real beer. There's no liquor. There's no wine. And so what do you have next to every grocery store in the state of Colorado? You have a liquor store. And it's this whole cottage industry, and it's tons of a lot of them are independent small businesses. And so by the state legislature making this change, allowing full-strength beer to be sold in grocery stores, how that's all going to play out is really interesting to me. I mean, it's not just Basalt's issue. I think you're going to see conversations about this everywhere. You're going to see it in Aspen because City Market sells 3-2 beer. So does that mean they're going to full strength?
And how does that affect Grog Shop?
How does that affect the Grog Shop? And we just, you know, we have this whole system in Colorado where we have these little small liquor stores everywhere. So I know they've been, you know, they've been fighting this for, you know, every year this gets talked about in the legislature, and somehow it got through this year because it's always, you know, these liquor stores have a pretty strong lobby at the state capitol. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel, Wyatt, that you have the heart of the defense for Four Dogs? I don't think I understood that quite, because the people in support of Four Dogs were saying, I shop there, I love them, they're my local liquor store, and so Whole Foods, who is literally right next to them, if they start selling this, that shop will be hurt. Well, right now they walk out of Whole Foods and they go into Four Dogs and buy wine and beer. Why would that stop, even if there was beer available in Whole Foods?
I think because of the sheer convenience of, you know, going grocery shopping and then also buying beer where you're shopping for groceries. I don't know. I mean, I would characterize the whole meeting as more emotional than necessarily kind of strong reasoned arguments on either side. Basically, the people there that were there in support of Four Dogs were saying, people don't want this. This is going to hurt our business. We are a locally owned place, and this is kind of, you know, this is kind of a typical David and Goliath story. And I think it was really about community. They really kind of tried to make the case that allowing Whole Foods to sell beer is going to hurt a local employer who employs community members and who can really suffer. Whereas Whole Foods, you know, Whole Foods isn't going to go anywhere. If they're not allowed to sell beer and kombucha, they're not going to like pack up and leave Willits. You know, like we're going to Carbondale.
They're doing fine.
Yeah, I think they're doing just fine. And so there was, yeah, I think that the council seemed pretty persuaded by the sort of David and Goliath element. I don't think that the attorney for Whole Foods did any help. He cross-examined a few of the community members who got up and spoke and testified, and it was one of the more awkward things I've ever sat through. This kind of slick attorney that's me kind of editorializing there, but this attorney cross examining these employees for Four Dogs, and it was just kind of this awkward display of power, and I really wasn't surprised that some of the council members seemed pretty offended.
All right, David and Goliath, Act One of a very dramatic Basalt Town Council meeting that we will get back to later in the show. You are listening to Valley Roundup. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Putting the news of the week into perspective for us today are Wyatt Orem with Aspen Public Radio, Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. We'll be right back. Curtis, there was a joint meeting between City Council and the Pickens County Commissioners earlier this month, but I haven't had a chance to pick your brain about it since then. Talking about, which they've been talking about for a little while, how might APSHA, mm-hmm. the Aspen-Pickens County Housing Authority, how might that be governed differently? I want your take on this.
So my take on it is there's been a lot of angst directed towards APSHA lately. It seems like they just can't do anything right. And I think a lot of it, let's be honest, is driven by the fact that housing's so impossible. And anything we do as far as affordable housing efforts in this community, it's never enough. I think APSHA gets the flack for that sometimes. But to answer your question, there's a lot of frustration related to APSHA's governance. It's a very awkward bureaucratic process because it's this quasi-independent agency that's actually sort of a child of the city and the county. Like, they both jointly fund its operations. And if ever APSHA wants to change its policy guidelines, they have to get it approved by the APSHA board, which is an appointed board of community members, community volunteers. And so they have to pass it. And then it goes to Aspen City Council and the Pitkin County Commissioners. And they both have to agree on it. And if either one of those elected boards wants to change anything, it's essentially a veto and has to go back through this whole process over and over again. And you had a scenario play out over the last couple of years where there's this problem throughout the affordable housing system where a lot of the ownership homeowners associations don't have adequate capital reserves. So when they need to replace their roof or their siding or some big ticket item, they're kind of screwed. And it's led to some deferred maintenance issues where they don't have the money, so they don't address these issues. And now that we're approaching, 30, 40 years old for some of these complexes, it's really becoming a problem. And so the city especially has been trying to come up with some policy that will help change this. And one of those ideas has been to throw some significant dollars at it. And that didn't go – the county didn't really like that. And so you just got into this sort of never-ending circle, dog chasing its tail, where you couldn't get any policy approved. It's been almost two years, and it's still gone almost nowhere. And so people in the city especially have thrown up their hands and said, this is ridiculous. We need to do something about this governance structure where we can't get anything done. And so a proposal has come forward. And what happened was the city – it's Councilman Adam Frisch especially has been pushing this. They kind of created a subcommittee with him, Mayor Steve Skadron, and a couple of Pickens County commissioners, George Newman being one. I'm not quite sure I forget who the other one is. And so this little subcommittee has been meeting, and they came up with a proposal, which basically scraps the APSHA board as it stands today and reconstitutes it as a board that has elected officials on it. So city council and Pickens County commissioners would designate two people each to go be on the APSHA board, which would still have some citizen representation on it. And so this board would then have final authority. It wouldn't have to go back through the other elected boards, which would theoretically streamline the process while also creating more accountability. And the argument, which holds a little bit of water, is that when you have this volunteer board that can have its work sort of vetoed by, the big brother elected official boards, what's the accountability there? Where does it really lie? And so if you have a board that has elected officials on it, you do have some accountability because it's an elected official. It's a higher profile person. If you don't like what they've done, you can vote them out in the next election, or you can try and recall them if you're really upset. So that would theoretically add some efficiency. It would streamline the process. It would add accountability. There's all sorts of complications with this idea. that have arisen that we're trying to work through, which is what we reported on at this meeting. You know, we had this meeting where the city council and the commissioners got together and talked about this idea, and people were in favor of the general concepts, like accountability and efficiency. Everybody likes that. But you know, what happens if you have like a city council member who goes rogue and votes for something that the rest of the city council doesn't approve of? And then the other thing you have to wonder about is when the APSHA board deals with a land use application, because they do that from the housing, like if a hotel's coming through, mm-hmm. the APSHA board has to approve its affordable housing plan. So if they vote on this and there's elected officials that are voting on it, are they then not allowed to vote on it in their capacity as city council members? And that would be a big concern. It's not really changing APSHA's management. It would still have the staff that that does their job. Oh, the other part of this is that there's a frustration with the enforcement.
Sure.
And that we're having all kinds of conversations about how to do enforcement better in the housing system. We're talking about having huge fines, for example, that aren't in place now. If you break the rules, you would have to pay a fine. They just hired a full-time compliance officer. And now when you are getting in trouble for breaking the housing rules, you can appeal and you go to the housing board and you plead your case, and the housing board decides whether or not they want to uphold what the staff has done, or if they want to give you a reprieve. And so what's going to happen anyway, even if we don't make this change to the structure of the board, is APSHA wants to bring in a hearing officer. And so the hearing officer deals with these appeal cases instead of the board. So you take the enforcement out of the board's hands. So there's a lot going on in APSHA right now. Not to mention that you have some high profile cases of people who have gotten in trouble, yep. for breaking the rules. Lee Mulcahy, who are just making an absolute spectacle of their displeasure with the system and going before city council every meeting and talking about how awful APSHA is. And you know, whether or not that is accurate or not, I think just having that message out there every day is influencing the public's perception of the system.
So that meeting ended with the county commissioner saying, we want a little more time to think about this. Let's all get back together and talk about governance again soon. I've been thinking about it as well. And one of the things that came up was how much time can city councilors really give and add to their lineup?
Just what we need is another meeting.
Exactly.
Right,
them to go to. There was a community barbecue supposedly put on by city council yesterday, of which two made it and they didn't stay the whole time. I mean, these are really busy people who are paid about $20,000 a year as public service.
Yeah,
it's not their full-time job.
Yeah, they get paid a couple bucks an hour basically for what for what they do.
So could they show up to this new APSHA board along with all their other committees and their other city council duties?
That was also a concern that was raised at that meeting. Can we put this on their plates? Is this really a good idea? Which I think is totally valid. You know, I kind of wonder what is the problem with the volunteer board doing these? I can understand the frustration over the policy, but one point I thought was really good that was made by Steve Child, the county commissioner, was like, maybe the dysfunction isn't the APSHA board. The dysfunction is the city and the county having, not being on the same page with some of these things. Because that's really what you saw with the capital reserves. That's why it was such a cluster.
And I'm so glad you started with capital reserves, because looking at the new makeup, it is the people who kind of lost in that negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
Proposing something where today, if that was in place, they would win instead, right? It's mm-hmm. the different makeup of having two city people vote for that. They would need a citizen to vote with them. You know, they could overrule the county and everything as long as the mm-hmm. citizens were on their side. And that is what it was for capital reserves. We had the board in favor. We had the city in favor.
Mm-hmm.
And the county is who blocked
well,
it.
Well, the board couldn't agree on a policy either. They said they needed more information, because also one of these big changes that APSHA is going through is they're doing a database that has information about
right.
every housing unit and who lives there and what the capital reserve situation is. So the APSHA board said, we don't want to make this decision until we have this information. And that's still a year away or something like that. So
I was trying not to read it as, hey, we lost the game. Let's change the rules.
Yeah, well, that's generous.
And this also just dovetails into another story that you had about the city council being very self-aware about how they present to the public anyway, that maybe they've had this habit of presenting an answer to a problem that most of the community didn't know existed, and then being shocked that the community didn't feel like they weighed in.
Right. This was at the council retreat a couple weeks ago, where we've had some very big time rebukes of city initiatives, really going back a number of years now, but most recently when they were talking about, the city was talking about taking away parking spaces on the Restaurant Row section of Hopkins Avenue and building these dedicated bike lanes and, you know, expanding outdoor dining and doing all this stuff. And it's this, you know, this utopian idea kind of, but once the business owners there got wind of parking spaces going away, it was just a total revolt. They organized, they got up in the city's face and got them to reverse this policy. And it was kind of this question of, you know, the city saying, well, maybe we didn't explain the problem enough. A lot of people are saying, no, that's not the problem. The problem is it's a bad idea. I don't know. I think there is something there. Like, certainly with that initiative, there wasn't a ton of outreach beforehand to the, you know, a lot of the businesses kind of read about it in the paper. You know, there wasn't this kind of, the city didn't go out there for months and lay the groundwork. Which, if they could go back and do it again, they would. So I think there is something to be said for clearly communicating the problem before you start proposing these radical solutions.
Wyatt, I want to close on what was called one of the Roaring Fork Valley's most important plots of land right now, because it's so rare. Undeveloped land along the Roaring Fork River in Basalt. This is what, you know, the final 2 and 2.5 hours of that Basalt Town Council meeting this week was all focused on: a new development for the Pan and Fork parcel.
Yeah, the Pan and Fork parcel is having its maybe the third time is the charm. We will see this. Yeah, this was kind of at the bottom of the 13th inning, they decided to start talking about one of the most controversial pieces of property in Basalt. So Tim Belinsky, who's the developer who built out Willits, he is proposing a development that's mostly housing. There is some space for the Art Base, which is a community arts organization. There's some space for the Basalt Chamber of Commerce to have a visitor center, and also maybe for a small kind of restaurant or coffee house or something. So this is the parcel that's right next to the Rocky Mountain Institute. Belinsky, if he buys this property from the current owner, which is the Roaring Fork Community Development Corporation, also known as the CDC, he will sell a portion of the property back to the town so that they can build the park. The park that is really kind of the white whale for the town of Basalt.
Do you know why the chamber and the Art Base are specified here as the residents of some of these spaces?
I don't know specifically. I mean, I think that there's a real clear appeal, I think, on the part of Belinsky to show that this is a community minded development that community partners stand to benefit a good deal from this development. And I think that it might kind of soften the blow of the fact that he is asking for a change in, he is asking for a new zoning, and he is asking for an alteration to the amount of affordable housing that he would have to provide. He'll provide, according to the current proposal, 22 row houses that will be free market, and then 6 affordable housing units. During the public comment, a lot of very familiar arguments came that had to do with, you know, is this really what we want to use this space for? Our second homeowner is just going to gobble these things up, and we're not going to really change any of the problems that kind of haunt us currently.
All right, that's going to do it for today. You've been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks so much to Curtis Wackerly, the editor of the Aspen Daily News, Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowman Sun, and Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm for joining me. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.